Road Show, episode number 412. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffey is with me on this massive, massive fight week. You know, they had that little tiny event back there in Australia last weekend, but now the
It's already forgotten. who even fought on that card?
I saw it, but I can hardly
recall. Was there a title fight on there?
I believe there may have been a little bit of it. But I tell you what, you know, I talked about it a little bit on the and a half episode. I will say that during that fight card, UFC 243, I mean, first, the whole fight week, honestly, man, like watching the open workouts, watching the weigh-ins, listening to the crowd, and I forgot in Perth that they start at 7 a.m., not like 9 a.m. where they do it like over in Sydney. So yep. 7 a.m., but dude, watching the show and watching the fight card all week, I did get a little bit of that, like, damn, I should have gone down there, man. Like, the Australian fans, they brought it, man. They brought the energy, and I was like, man, should have gone. And then I realized the Super Bowl was the next day, and I realized once the fight card was over, I didn't have 30 hours to travel home. And then I've been paying attention to Jose Young's tweets that he's like stuck in Australia and can't get home, and flights missing.
As much as he loves to travel, he somehow always gets stuck on travel. He's having recent like issues every time he travels. But back up, did you say UFC 243?
What is it?
I think he said UFC 243.
Oh, sorry. No, that was another one in Australia.
What I was going to say. I was like, what the fuck? I'd have to go back and re-listen, but I swear, I was like, did he just say 243? I thought you said 243, and I was like, let me just look up 243. 243 was Whittaker and Adesanya.
Maybe that's the last time
Melbourne,
I was in Australia. Maybe that's the last time I was in Australia. That is so weird.
Is that really?
UFC.
That was 2019. That was the last time you were there?
I don't know.
I bet you were there after that. I feel like you were probably there after that.
But the pandemic was early 2020. Wow. That is weird that my brain just did that.
It just rejected.
Oh,
now watch, I'm
going
to go back and listen to it, and that's not even going to be a thing. And then I'm like, well, then I guess Kenny just had a brain. I'm having a seizure.
Yes, it would be UFC 284. That is hilarious.
That sounds more like
it. Wow, the brain does weird stuff, man. All right, UFC 284, of course, was the one that took place in Perth. Islam Makhachev beat Alexander Volkanovski. Yeah, I did get jealous that I wasn't there. That was a pretty special atmosphere, man. But then that journey home and all that, I was glad that I didn't have to mess with that. So, but a special card. But I did, you know, talked about – well, I haven't even really asked you. I mean, did you have any issues with the main event, with the scoring? I had it 3-2 Islam Makhachev. It was a close fight.
It was close.
If anybody says they had it for Volkanovski, I'm not looking at them going like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I get the argument. But I thought they were close rounds, but I had it 3-2.
I definitely thought it was close rounds. I think part of it, too, I think there was a part of me, you know, whenever you start getting into it for a particular fighter, when you're really starting to pull for him, whether you mean to or not mean to. I actually picked Islam in the staff picks, but as the fight was going on, of course, there's a part of you that you just want Volkanovski to show up. Oh. And then when he started having some really great job of getting out of all the takedowns, you know, he was fighting everything off, then I was like, hell yeah, good job. But then I think something in my brain was then starting to notice everything good that he was doing, and maybe that was the cause for it. But at the end of the day, when they did the call, I certainly felt like, okay, yes, I can live with it. I knew it was going to be close, but like you said, if it would have went the other way, you know, I certainly wouldn't be like, oh, I didn't see that. You know,
no, I agree.
It was the closest of margin. I think everybody can easily say that both guys took two rounds. It was just whoever was able to get that third round in there, you know. And, you know, it was close, but it was great. It was a great, great fight.
It really was.
You know, I love seeing all the comments. A lot of people, you know, coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, that overall was just such a high technical level of fight. Like a guy I love and respect a lot, you know, Matt Brown was even like, you know, this is some of the best MMA that's out there, you know, at such a high level. And he doesn't give out praise like that often, you know. So to even see that, I was like, okay, it's not just us normal folk, us peons that are getting moved by the fight.
Yeah.
Even actual fighters that are watching it, even the true experts are like, wow, this is some really good shit. And it was incredible. It was everything I thought we would see. We got to see big strikes. You know, we got to see the takedowns. Everybody's wondering if there was going to be the question, if he got taken down, would Volk be able to get up? And he certainly did, you know. And he was landing good shots. But then also Islam was landing some good shots as well, you know.
Just because of the power he carries.
Yeah.
Like, they were meaning more. And, yeah, you were seeing Volkanovski kind of, you know, acknowledge the strikes because he was getting tagged a little bit. So it was a great fight. It was fun. And I really don't think Volkanovski's stock went down at all. But here's the interesting part. So for anybody that doesn't know, I do vote in the UFC's rankings. And the really only thing that mattered was just pound for pound and where you put them there. And I weighed back and forth, man, because I was thinking as it goes on, oh gosh, this performance from Volkanovski is so good. He's the one moving up in weight. He's the one that's fighting out of his weight class. He's taking the number one guy to the limit. Like, to leave him at number one pound for pound, given what he did against the lightweight champ, completely justifiable, right? I mean, I would totally understand.
Yep.
But I ultimately decided that even though that's kind of the pound for pound, it's kind of a hypothetical thing.
Yep.
I just felt you still have to respect the head-to-head result. So I switched them. I put Islam at number one pound for pound, Alexander Volkanovski at number two. But it didn't come out that way in the UFC's official rankings.
Because it's a majority,
so I guess,
right?
Yeah, I was in the minority. Yeah, they tabulate up all the votes. You send them in. So he ended up staying at number one. And it's an interesting one because I completely understand.
I can see it.
I completely understand. But I do feel like, you know, again, if they're in different weight class, like let's say Volkanovski had lost to Islam Makhachev and the number two guy was, you know, somebody else in another division, right? Maybe Makhachev was number five or number eight or maybe he wasn't even on the list. Like, I could see that you could argue that Volkanovski could maintain his pound-for-pound spot because he didn't lose that. But I just feel like you kind of have to respect the head-to-head results. Ultimately,
you
I decided.
You have to. I mean, I think in most cases, you know, when you look down the pound-for-pound ranking, most guys are jumping all across divisions. You know, you don't have a lot of, you know, really close, you know, weight classes. You know, when you look kind of through it there, yes, when you – now that I say that, I see Leon Edwards and I see Kamaru Usman and I see Israel Adesanya and now I see Alex Pereira. Besides those guys that are all, like, in the same weight class around there, usually guys don't have the opportunity to fight, you know? It's always been like, okay, there's Demetrius Johnson. Oh, there's John Jones. Yeah. Oh, there's GSP.
How do you even
How
compare
can you
them?
Even do it? And it was always, like, one of these things that was, like – that was what was always kind of cool about the pound for pound because it was always just a point of discussion.
Right.
You know, it was like, well, my pound for pound guy is this and it's because of this. And you're like, okay, I'm gonna wear that as a badge of pride. Now that there was the actual possibility for them to fight, then they're like, okay, we could take all the talk off of the table and let's just put them in a ring and let that decide it. And we got to see that. So, yeah, I mean, to disregard an actual head-to-head fight, it's kind of silly,
yeah.
Because at that point, you know, you have to give credit because it's not theoretical at that point. It's been proven.
Great.
The fight actually happened.
Yep.
You know,
that's
like
so true. That's right. The whole thing is, what if they were the same
weight?
You know, and they fought? Well, it's like, well, they were the same weight. Maybe only for a day. You know, for 5 minutes they were the same weight, but they were the same weight, and they fought.
Yeah.
I just don't think you can throw that away.
You can't throw away the head-to-head because what's the point then? You know,
yeah.
I mean that's what everybody's always wanting. You know, everybody always talks a good game until the shit actually happens. The shit actually happens.
Yes.
You know, so you can't then say, well, no, but let me find other reasons to keep him up there.
Yeah, but he was the one that moved up in weight, so
you
got to lean
look
into
at the,
that.
How many defenses,
you know,
blah, 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 blah. I mean, all that does, you know, those are all important factors.
They are.
But, you know, same thing when people, I think when you look at judging criteria, people say, okay, well, there's a strike. Then there's significant strikes.
Right.
Okay, then there's control time. When you look at title defenses, when you look at just overall defenses, when you look at the guys that he's beat, those are all qualifying factors. I would think the most crucial thing, like just like a significant strike or some of these other things, is an actual head-to-head matchup. There's nothing bigger than that. When it comes to comparing two guys, there's nothing – yes, you can say, yes, this guy had eight defenses. Oh, this guy's only got three defenses. But, yes, then they met in a ring – and this guy starts the other dude. Are you going to say the guy with nine is better than three when three just goes in there and starts? You can't.
Right.
I mean, like, I think you have to value certain things above other qualities, and a head-to-head should be the trump card of all the other qualifying factors.
Especially when they're right next to each other. Because I'll be honest.
When they're right next. When it's one and two, just swap it.
On my rankings panel, I don't have Leon Edwards ahead of Kamaru Usman in the pound for pound.
Yeah.
Because again, title defenses, how the fight was going. One guy was winning 24 minutes of it. One guy won two seconds of it. How many title defenses did the guy have? So I factored all that in. But had they gone into that fight with, like, you know, one at three and one at four or whatever, then you got to switch them.
Yeah.
So, I don't think the head-to-head, like, has to trump immediately.
Now when you're pulling out things like that, when it's like,
But when they're together. When they're together in the rankings. Before Leon.
Because where was Leon? Leon wasn't even close to it.
On the pound-for-pound list, I didn't have Leon on my pound-for-pound list before he beat Usman,
you know,
and so I didn't feel like, and I had Usman, I want to say, like, number two, I think maybe you're at number two behind Volkanovski.
Leon sitting at three on the UFC's pound per pound.
Dude, I have him at like 14.
Wow,
I have him way down there, and I don't mean.
And I bet you're right. I bet he wasn't. I wish we could go back in time to see what it was, but you're right. I bet before the Kamara, I wonder what he was even sitting at. Yeah, at so that one.
I look, so I have this spreadsheet that I used for mine. So mine's, yeah. And the reason I like the spreadsheet is because I keep it updated for the last 3 years, right? So I can see, right, I can compare them side by side to each other, right? Now, if you look at them side by side when we're talking about Edwards and Usman, Edwards, of course, 20-3, great record. Usman, 20-2. It's almost the exact same record. But the last 3 years, Edwards has a win over Usman, a win over Nate Diaz, and a no contest with Bilal Muhammad, whereas Kamaru Usman in the last 3 years has the loss to Leon Edwards, the win over Covington, the win over Masvidal, the win over Burns, the win over Masvidal. So I don't know. It just I didn't feel like that 1 second of one fight vaulted him up to number three. So I do think there are arguments to be made. And again, I hate to spend way too much time on this because this is all just theoretical, hypothetical stuff anyway. But I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I was just curious if you felt the same way I do, that you got to respect that head-to-head.
You definitely have to. But, I mean, you started swaying again when you start bringing the Leon Edwards. But you're right. These guys were side by side. I mean, it's interesting. I'm just – now that I'm looking at the pound-for-pound list, I mean, it's crazy. Now they're looking – Jamal Hill's on number 13.
Wow.
Literally came from around. I'm like, why is his name? I love Jamal. He's done some great shit, but how is he number 13? Like that set of ranking, their qualification or whatever is just a little bit crazy. I mean, I'm looking at.
I don't have Jamal Hill on my
last
pound for pound list.
Glover, Thiago Santos, Johnny Walker, Jimmy Crute, great, great wins. But then he had a win on a loss 5 fights ago against Paul Craig. And it's like, but now he's 13. I'm like, I just don't know about that. But I don't know. But, again, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, like, right now, Jamal Hill, I mean, the wins over Craig is a ranked opponent, but not a highly ranked opponent. I mean, excuse me, the loss there, the win over Crute, the win over Walker, ranked. It's tough, man. I don't have him on my pound-for-pound list.
Yeah.
I actually don't.
That's crazy. But, I mean, again, that's the thing. Like, it's meant for debate. You know, it's a lot of fun and this and that. But, yeah, you're right. All right, so maybe while I still think the head-to-head should have maybe a little bit more value than some of the other things, you're right. I think if the guys are side-by-side and it's a real actual, you know, conversation, maybe it does work. But I don't know. I'm not sad about the 1 and 2 because, again, it's still just talking points. And when you take the point of, like, yes, Volk went up and very easily could have won that fight,
yes.
You know, but it's hard to take stock away from Islam. Like, if those would swap, it doesn't mean anything, you know.
Nah,
just like, I mean,
just a talking point.
It's just a talking point, but it is fun to kind of get people to route up, because I think if you went through that list and saw some of the names, just like Jamal, I could see where somebody can be like, "What is he doing?" Because it's a good talking point. It's a good list.
So it's
to
funny.
At.
So because I vote on the panel, like, I get the results before
guys,
they get posted.
You guys
posted.
Never actually talk to the other members.
No.
You would think that you guys have like a Discord channel or a
no,
Slack
it's all
channel
just like a voting thing. You just log in and you know.
I guess maybe that's part of the thing too. Is you don't want others swaying the other
influence
vote.
Or whatever. Yeah. So we get the results early. So it was funny. So I've been putting out on Monday nights when they're, you know, and I knew that one was going to blow up, and I was like, oh, this one's dead. And it did. But you know what's funny? You talk about the discussion, dude. It was like 50-50 down the middle. Of like half the people were like, "That's some garbage," and the other half was like, as it should be. Like, nobody's like, "Well, I could see either way." I guess that's what you do online, right? You just take an absolute. You say,
nobody
like,
has logical discussions online.
It was just like, this is either trash or it's exactly perfect. So
give me 10 push-ups.
Yeah, exactly, right? Mute. All right, so listen. From there, UFC 243.
Exactly.
Dude.
So you did say it earlier.
I did say it earlier.
You did. You got it on the brain.
Holy cow, man.
You
that
got
is
it on the
so
brain.
Bizarre. UFC 284. That is so wild. UFC
John's back in time.
Oh my goodness. So from UFC 284, then of course, before we got the full shift over to UFC Fight Night 219, we had another big card in town in Las Vegas.
We did.
And that was, of course, Lingerie Fighting Championships at the Sapphire Gentlemen's Club, the new home of Lingerie Fighting Championships.
It's a very nice home.
A very nice home. If you get a chance in your Vegas to stop by Sapphire, definitely do that. But yeah, it was pretty funny when I told my wife, hey, she was like, what are we doing for Valentine's Day? And I'm like, well, funny thing about Valentine's Day, honey. See, I've got work to do. She's like, oh, really? What kind of work to do? Well, I got a commentary gig. You know what I'm saying? Oh, really? Really? What kind of commentary gig? You know, I got to go to the strip club and call lingerie fights. You know what I'm saying? So it was.
But at least she knows about lingerie fighting. It's not like you brought that up for the first time. And we've been doing this now for years. You know, so
she got a kick out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
She was having fun telling her friends. You know, like she said that, you know, like her friends, well, what are y'all doing for Valentine's Day? It's like, my husband's going to the strip club. Like, oh, this is too funny. We had a good time, man. It was fun. It sounds like that'll be the new home for Lingerie Fighting Championships, which is cool.
Some talent in the building.
I'm very worried. We need to make sure they never pay us in cash because we're going to end up losing money working there.
Just walk, keep walking towards the door. Just keep walking towards the door. At the very end, like, granted, there were the ring car girls, just beautiful, beautiful.
Gorgeous.
After they were done and, like, they're packing up and getting ready to, like, clear the room out, some girls were coming in to, like, clear the reserve signs off the tables and just removing the dressing, clearing up the tables. They were 10s. They were 11s. Oh. They were just absolute not. Because I was like, they got them in here cleaning the tables. I was like, that's who cleans tables? I'm like, who's in there on the dance floor? I mean, this place, so when you look at their stats online, it's like 70,000 square feet. They say they have over 400 girls working. And now we know some of them do the housekeeping as well. But, man, this place, it is not cheap. I've just did some looking up some of the numbers.
Super nice, though.
It is absolutely fantastic inside. It's one of the nicest ones. I mean, some of the clubs down there, you know, when you go to – well, for those of you that have never been to a strip club, sometimes the seedy, dark, dirty, nasty ones are fun as well for their own reason. This
sketchy
is completely opposite of that. This was it looks like you're walking into a nice high-end club.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have, like, multiple bars set up. Very, very nice. So, I mean, like, the talent that works there is top-notch. And so plan accordingly with your budget.
If you're looking for a high-end experience, man, where, like, you're trying to, like just live it up. Like, that's the spot to
go. People used to always go, like, Spearmint Rhino, and that's, like, that's a good one.
Sure.
But this place, I think they got voted out this year. There's something with two gentlemen's two or another club. I have to look it up. Got voted for Vegas's best. But before that, the past 8 years, Sapphire has been like the voted best gentlemen's club in Vegas. So, I mean, that's saying something right there.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, if we get to spend more time in there, I'm not going to be upset about it.
We're all right with that.
I'll be all right with that.
We had an MMA veteran on the car. We had Kira Batar there,
a
which was pretty cool.
Fighter.
She was having fun. We had
I thought she did really, really well.
She did a good job.
I mean,
she's always been kind of an entertainer, so she took right to it.
Well, I mean, because I saw some of the stuff on her Instagram where she does, like, party hosting and other little stuff. But still, I mean, she's been in there legit fighting. So me and John were talking about, we were like, dude, does she know this is – you got to take it easy.
Take it easy. Like, don't go in there and light
this
girl.
Don't go in there and, like, literally just throw down. And but she was perfect. She played the part so well. I mean, the level of the girls that have been doing this you actually now are having more that didn't just do, like, professional wrestling type of stuff. They're actually, you can see some that have done actual training. And now we're getting girls that have done training, done the professional wrestling, and actually done professional fights.
Right.
So the quality of the women that are starting to do this is
getting better
fantastic, man. So, yeah, the show last night, and I thought the girls really stepped up. I mean, we've seen enough of these shows that, you know, you could tell the times when maybe they just haven't worked out the routines before.
Yeah, somebody's a little bit
really,
lost.
You know, they haven't really practiced things. I thought they were just spot on last night. So, I mean, that was a good one to show up for. I mean, you know, if there's a potential – and part of last night's show was to really showcase and for potential investors. Another one's the potential of what a show could look like at a place like that.
Yep.
I thought they brought it. You know, I thought they brought it. So, I'm looking forward to hopefully a lot more events there.
Our monthly trip to Sapphire.
Yeah, that would be nice. And that was the first time I walked in there, and I was just like, I didn't know what to expect, but man, I was blown away by the place.
Super, super nice.
Yeah.
Looking forward to doing more shows. And then after all that, then we turned ourselves to this week's card, UFC Fight Night 219. Media Day was today, as it is on Wednesdays. Ultimate Fighter filming is starting to get underway there.
Yes.
We started to see some folks walking in
there. We did have a person come jump into the media room afterwards.
We'll let it be nameless. You know, he wanted to be off record. He knew he wasn't supposed to be speaking to the media, but he did come say hello and check in with the boys. But, yeah, looking forward to that. But UFC Fight Night 219, media day today. And I think, you know, listen, and this happens every time. After the big pay-per-view card, you look at the next week's card and you're just like, what? You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I'm not it's every time because those pay-per-view cards are just stacked so much.
Yeah.
So I think we came in today with like, okay, well, we'll see what we get. But honestly, I walked away from today, I don't want to say if entertained is the right word, but I thought there were some really good interviews today, man. Some really kind of deep, like emotional type stuff. And
Josh Parisian,
man. I want to encourage everybody, when you get a second, to go check out Josh Parisian's video. I'll even give a plug to the MMA Junkie YouTube page, because I didn't produce all the videos, because I'm not going to produce every one of them.
But, oh, I was going to plug it anyways, but I'm glad you did.
You can do that. Yeah. Look, it's been a year. I'm okay with it, right? Like, we'll get over it. But, man, you know, so he went through that situation last time, which to me, I mean, it basically at the time he posted it kind of sounded like a panic attack, really, right? Yeah. That he said he woke up and heart palpitations and a sweat and felt light and that sort of thing. So anyway, he ended up pulling out of that fight with Chase Sherman. We'll come to find out that he went to a cardiologist, and he does have a little bit of a like a heart rhythm type issue that he was talking about, and he's been prescribed some medication for it that addresses it. But very, very emotional. And he was kind of apologetic, which I felt bad because he didn't need to be apologetic. I love to see that type of emotion. But he just said, you know, basically that – I think he said his girlfriend was like a lawyer or a doctor.
Yeah, lawyer.
Lawyer. And makes all the money that they need. He doesn't need to financially contribute.
Yeah, apparently a very good lawyer.
Yeah, because he said, you know, look, she handles everything. Like, but he just loves competing so much that, you know, he wants to do this. And he said that they had a discussion because I guess she hates it. You know, she hates what he's doing, which you get it, man. If you're around the sport for any time whatsoever and you get to know the families and stuff, you know, the fighters, of course, they get a little bit nervous. Every fighter is a little bit nervous. But the families, it is torture to the families to watch their loved ones go in there and know what they're and know what their body's going through. And Josh was talking about, man, you know, the family had basically decided that he was done, but then he just, you know, couldn't accept that. You know, he's like, I just love this so much. He's like, I get a sense of purpose. I just love the sport, and I decided I'm going to continue to do it. Yeah. So I don't
and
know.
It was all while he was getting very emotional as well. He was almost to the point of tears. So while we've heard that same sort of sentiment, you know, from fighters before, but to actually – he was starting to like shake and quiver, and you could hear the thickness in his voice. I mean, so he was getting very emotional about it, and that was the first I've ever seen him like that, you know? And we've seen other fighters do it, but I mean, when you hear things like that, I mean, there's nothing that makes it resonate and hit home when you're actually seeing him. And he was even sort of kind of apologetic. He was like, I don't know what's going on right now. He's like, I don't normally do this. He's like, I don't know why I'm getting emotional thinking about this, but you know.
Well, he said it was the first time he'd kind of really talked about it openly, right? So it was.
And that's I love it when they feel comfortable enough to like share that sort of stuff. I mean, that's part of why, I mean, honestly, why I love some of those fight weeks being there is just getting to see that thing. After a while, when you've done 50,000 interviews, you know, and that's probably what it's been, you know, things, you know, it's easy for things to just kind of run by the normal way. We're just like, okay, interview, okay, let me put it
camp,
in this pocket here,
win,
let me put this in this and this, you know, folder over here, and let's just go. But then when you start to see something, it's like, wait, you just really got it. You just lock in and you paid attention to it, you know, and it was hard to not get moved by the emotion that he was showing and what he went through. I think anybody, when you're faced with that thing that you love to do and you know there's a potential for it to actually be done, we see that oftentimes where fighters don't know when to walk away. This is where he thought the potential, his dream, something that he's worked so hard for to be done, and just didn't want to do it. But then facing that emotion and facing that fact, you know, I mean, who wouldn't be emotional about that sort of thing? So it was really, really cool. I mean, and to just feel that he was confident enough and comfortable in our room to do that sort of thing. You know, maybe if there was 100 people in there, maybe they don't share that shit. A lot of times we joke about, oh, well, there's only a few of us there. But I guarantee some of the shit that we get out of there sometimes is because of the fact that it is kind of small and quaint. And they're like, oh, okay, I'm talking to the same faces I see every time. It's not like a bunch of strangers in a room, you know, with 50,000 cameras, you know. And there's something cool about that, you know. So as much as people a lot of times like, oh, no, it's another Apex show, there are some great facts that come out of the Apex show. I know even some of my colleagues at Junkie are like, man, they want to see the show on the road all the time. I'm like, dude, I kind of like the home games. unless they're just like, oh, you know, they want to get on the road. I can understand that. But I'm like, I don't know why people fault the Apex and want it to, like, go away. I like the home games.
I do, too.
You know, just being able to drive down the street, we get the stuff that we need, and then the day is over. You know, it's not like having to leave your family, leave your home for a week on end, you know. I mean, that's great and all, but you know, after so many years, you know, it's kind of nice to stay home.
I ain't complaining, man. I ain't complaining at all. So definitely a storyline worth following. And like I said, go check out that interview, man. You'll have a hard time not pulling for Josh Parisian, except for the fact that, and now I'm torn because I'm going to be pulling for Josh Parisian because I saw the man just bare his soul in front of us, except that he's fighting Jamal Pogues, who is a super entertaining guy and who also was fun today because you remember when he won on the Contender Series, he came back and was and in his post-fight interview with the UFC and with us was just dropping F-bombs like crazy, you know? And they were
– Who else does that?
I don't know. Just dropping F-bombs like crazy. And then he kind of admitted the point that they told him, hey, can you chill out on that a little bit, especially on ESPN? You know, we prefer not to have quite so many. So today he came to his whole interview, and unbeknownst to anyone in there, I just decided to keep counting them all. And when he got to the end of his scrum, I was like, hey, man, only 11 F-bombs today. Like, how do you feel about that? You know, just kind of
jugging him off again.
Which set him off. So then but what was funny is, so then he delivers like a little like monologue for about 3 minutes talking about being real. And it was cool. Like, what are you saying about just.
That was great.
Look, he's like, look, man, I'm just who I am. You know, I'm trying to keep the language down, but I am who I am. And it's important in life that we're real, that we're not all trying to be Conor McGregor, that we're all trying to be ourselves. And that's just who I am. And he went. But at that point, he fired off 12 more. So in the little time afterwards, in his final answer, he ripped off 12 F-bombs. So
I think
it was kind of funny.
Because I think at the end, I lost track because I was like, I was up to
23.
I was like 25 or 27. Oh, maybe you got me. But then I was like, am I adding ones on there? Because I would count the time, because then he would say, like, fuckers, and then he would say, like, you know, fucking this or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I remember just I was, like, joking. I was like, there's another one.
I know.
There's another one. There's another one.
It was funny.
Yeah. But, no, that was great. And you're right. I mean, that was another really good one, too. I mean, I did pick Parisian in my staff picks, but I don't know, man. You see things like today, and you just kind of, like, I was like, man, maybe I kind of forgot who his opponent really was. And then I was like, oh, man, okay. But, again, I might just chalk this up to see how they are on weigh-in on some of those ones. But I did lead Parisian, and I liked his story. I like his effort. Now, after seeing his heart and what it means to him, I'm like, he's willing to give it all out there, you know, and I have no doubt. But after seeing his opponent, too, I mean, his opponent, it seemed like he's pretty willing to give everything in there as well. And it's the only heavyweight, unless I'm mistaken, we got a couple light heavyweight fights. It's
the only heavyweight fight on the card.
Yeah, I mean, you got to love the big boys bringing on this card. And that guy, I think they got two guys that are going to be game to go out there and leave it all. So, but man, you're going to kind of be crushed for either guy. If one of them gets done early and like in the first round, I'm going to be crushed for whoever it is. But,
I know. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
First fight on the main card, Jim Miller versus Alexander Hernandez. I thought both their interviews were good today as well. Jim Miller, of course, the veteran, right?
Yeah. Great
hair. But it's so weird. The hair is looking phenomenal right now. He's got this thing growing out. He says like a Patrick Swayze type thing he's looking for.
Man.
And he's like, man, I've had this great head of hair the whole time, but I've had a buzz cut. You know, he's like, come on, man.
I always got it under my farmer's hat, my trucker hat.
I'm telling you, man, hilarious. But so Jim Miller, obviously the quintessential veteran. I mean, I believe this is fight number 40 in the UFC. He's trying to get to 45. But it's wild because, you know, he's been talking about that for a while, right? Obviously, he fought at UFC 100. Obviously, fought at UFC 200. And he's been saying it for a while, I want to get to UFC 300. But what's wild is –
we just had UFC 243.
I mean, we just had 243 a week ago, so still a long way. Yeah, but that's what's weird is he's been talking about it so long that it still seemed like long way away.
Yeah.
Way off in the distance. Now it's about a year and a half away, right?
It's so close.
And so he's like – he even said, he's like, well, I'd like to have this one more in the summer, you know, then one in the spring, and then 300. And he's like, I want 300 to be the last one. That's why I want to walk away. But – it used to just be this thing that was like way out there, and how cool would it be on 100, 200? But now it's like, no, I know what date it is, and it's not that far away.
It's not that far.
The end is near, and I know that Jim Miller isn't, you know, a legend of the game, a former champion, of this and that, you know, a Fedor Emelianenko walking away, a Shogun Hua walking away. But it is absolutely like another, you know, closing of the era type thing when he walks away.
He's been there for multiple eras.
True.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, and it's funny because I remember, it was like a couple years back when the last time I remember we were just doing the numbers and we were like, you know, it's just a few years away. You keep this going, you know, it could happen. And it's just right around the corner to think that, you know, like what is it, five more fights or whatever? Like, that's ridiculous.
It's insane.
It's ridiculous. They have to give up. I mean, like, And this is a guy that's in good favor with the UFC. All he has to do is keep his nose clean and keep fighting how he's doing and just don't get hurt.
Yep.
And that's going to happen.
Oh, they'll put him on 300. Because Dana knows he wants to be on, and yeah. They'll put him on 300. And
He's done his work. He deserves it. You know.
Here's a question for you. Now, by the way, so if you want to put it in perspective, the UFC debut for Jim Miller, October 18th, 2008.
That's crazy.
Almost 15 consecutive years on the UFC roster. UFC 89 was where he debuted, and that's unbelievable.
What's funny, because when he was saying, like, oh, I'm going to go for my 45th, I was like, oh, it's just his 45th fight. 45th with the UFC.
It's insane.
This is what the UFC. He's got, like, a ton more outside of that. I was, like, doing the number. I was like, wait, no, his record's, like, 40 and, like, 20,000 or something.
Unbelievable.
Unreal, dude.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say he fights five more times, walks away at UFC 300. Hall of Fame?
I would like to see him in that.
I think so, too.
It's just tough because, I mean, everybody wants to see certain criteria or whatever. I mean, I just wish that they had, like, a wild card that they could be, like, UFC president vote or commission vote, a fan vote or something. You know, I get it, the Pioneer Wing exists. I get it, you know, the modern era or this fight of the whatever, blah, blah, blah. For guys that have never had, a title or didn't have these crazy title reigns, there needs to be something. These
Absolutely.
Fan favorite guys, you know.
Donald Cerrone.
Like,
Hall of Fame.
You know.
Hall of Fame.
Definitely worthwhile. I mean, like, even if it's just, like, fuck. Let him just say it's a fan vote and never actually take a fan vote. Just put him in. You know, just find some reason to, like, be able to put these guys in. Because, you know, when sticklers are going to be like, well, you know, the criteria really needs to change to have this. I mean, like, who doesn't love those both of these names that we just said?
Absolutely.
I mean, they're very beloved, but –
Well, and those longevity records mean something. You know, I think about, like, I don't really follow baseball anymore, but let's say, like, you know, 3,000 hits was always, like, a big one for baseball, right? Like, if you get 3,000 hits, like, even if you're a lifelong, like, 270 hitter, like, you know what I mean? You never won a batting title. You never won whatever. But you still got 3,000 hits.
Right.
Like, you're
but
the
they've
Hall
never
of
had
fame.
Anybody like that for in the UFC, but it makes sense, right? That they should have something like that because it makes sense in baseball.
You're getting 35, 40 fights in the. I mean, you walk to the octagon 40 times. Hall of Fame.
You would think already. Yeah.
You know
what I mean, like,
I mean?
30 times. Like, it's ridiculous. Most guys only last. I mean, when you look at some of these people, they maybe make it 5 times.
Oh, yeah.
To think that the dudes are. Like 8 times that. It's ridiculous.
Crazy,
I mean,
man.
Like, yeah, I mean, clearly has done the body of work. Whether or not, you know, you want to say, oh, well, he never rattled off 10 in a row. He never did this. You're right. I mean, longevity definitely is one of those things that you got to give him his due. And, I mean, I think it would have to be a real, real sort of just asshole to not want him in there unless you're just a stickler or something. But yeah, longevity means something. If it means something in baseball and the other things, if you can keep your body able to do this sort of thing. And there was a long time he was dealing with the Lyme disease and doing all this other stuff, and he was still fighting at a high level. And to think that he was still able to do that, like, the guy deserves it, you know. But man, now I'm sad thinking about, like, man,
I know
he is
I'm telling you.
I mean, when he walks away, that definitely is one last one, because we don't see Diego's gone. Diego's finally made his exit, you know.
Right.
He's still trying to fight and do other things, but he's Jim's. He's won the last of a certain breed that, you know, just built different.
It's an era, dude.
Yeah,
it's an era. All right, he's facing Alexander Hernandez, who I thought it was interesting, right? Because he's kind of been this guy that he's always just bravado, right? Like, he's the alpha male and he's this, you know. I thought it was kind of cool to hear him say, like, dude, I realize, man, I don't want long buildups anymore. Like, I just want kind of short notice, like, get me in there because I overthink this stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I put too much pressure on my stuff and I make too much out of the moment. And I just thought it was kind of cool to hear him admit that, because up to this point, it just always felt like he doesn't admit that there's any potential failure on his side, you know. And I don't know, a little bit of vulnerability. It's a tough ask, though. You know what I mean? Jim Miller is a veteran. Alex Hernandez is a pretty sizable favorite here, but Jim Miller, bro, he's a wily veteran, man.
This is one of those fights that you think that you can tell that Jim's probably going to show up. I mean, like, you can never count out Miller,
right?
I mean, and I think it's just the certain fighters bring him. Up to that level, you know.
Yep.
And this is definitely one of those fighters that, you know, he's not going to be able to slouch, and he's not just going to be able to intimidate. He's not going to have a guy across the, you know, that's going to be across the cage like, oh, it's Jim Miller, you know, man, he's been doing this for so long, I'm kind of nervous. He's not going to get that with Alexander. And I think by seeing Alexander coming, trying to put it on him, that's going to bring Jim up as well and elevate his game. And I could definitely see Jim walking in with this. I think I picked Hernandez in my staff picks. just because I think he does have some power, he does have some speed. But man, I wouldn't be surprised. I have to go back. I wouldn't be surprised if I did take Miller in this one. But yeah, man, it was good to hear it. I mean, it's just good to hear that. You know, every guy has respect for Miller when they go there. You know, it'd be pretty crazy if a guy showed up for a media day and was like, you know, what has this guy done? he's too old. What has he even done? You know, so it was nice to, you know, to hear some respect coming from Hernandez. And, you know, he's not the first guy that said that they kind of like the short notice fight, you know, less, you know, weighing on. They could just go in there, make sure that their weight's on point. You know, are they feeling fit? Can they make it through three rounds, you know, and just take all that stress off it? So it's not a great business model to just sit around waiting for short notice fights. You know, you kind of want to make sure you're planned and you're prepared and you're peaking at the right time. But if this is the kind of thing that works out, and if it works out in its favor right there, and you can take a short notice fight against Jim Miller and have your way, then yeah, then I would maybe stick to that. But generally, I would think he would probably want to make sure that he has a proper fight camp for guys, you know, especially at this level.
Yep.
You want to make sure you're prepared, you know, whether you watch tape or not. You just want to make sure that you're peaking at the right time. But a lot of these cats are always in a gym, you know. They're probably regular easy week is a high intense week for us normal folk, you know. So, you know. Good if he likes the short notice fights, but it just makes sense that you would really want to make sure that you're prepared and have a proper camp. But, you know, the mentality seems to be as big as the physical side of things. So if that's what's helping you perform better because you have less stress and you're just like, dude, I don't even have to worry about this. I'm just showing up and I'm fighting. I get to do the fun stuff. That's what everybody always says, right?
The
fight camp sucks. That's the part they hate, and the fight's the actual fun part. So I don't know. Maybe this is the new way of things.
This game is such a psychological game, man. Yeah. And I like when people talk about it, because there was a time when people really didn't like to talk about it. You know what I mean? But I love the fact they really do, because it is such a big part of the game. William Knight and Marcin Pragnio, the rescheduled fight. Now, here's what I took out of this. Now, William Knight admitted he had a rough year last year. He's like, I had a couple losses. He's like, I also had a couple losses in my family, and it was tough. You know what I mean? He's like, and anyway, I had to reschedule from November because my knee was hurt, and I saw some other people with some knee injuries, and it just seemed like a sign to me that I need to get out. So it seemed like he took some time off, and he was good to go. But what stood out to me in that one is that we asked Marcin, you know, like, hey, did you, like, want to keep this fight together, or did you ask for somebody else? And he was like, oh, they asked me if I wanted somebody else, and I was like, nah, I want this fight. So yeah. I think Marcin, it's interesting because I think the line is basically a pick 'em, but it made me feel like Marcin loves this matchup. I mean, for you to go – I mean, it's not like he's number five and he was facing number three and he's like, bro, I'm going to wait for number three because I'm trying to get myself a title shot. Like, there's a whole lot of people that you could fight because they're not in the rankings, so it doesn't really matter who you fight. And for him to go like, you know what, man? Nah. I'll sit around and wait a couple months.
You know, I mean, I've been preparing. You know, why would I waste it on another guy? I just have to do all that preparing again, you know?
Makes me think he loves this matchup.
I mean, when you look at the size, you know, granted, William is just a specimen, man. He's just a Hulk of a dude. And what did he say he was benching up? Like
benching 455. And by the way, not
– Three sets of three?
Three sets of three. Yeah, that's not his max. That's his reps that he's
Which
doing.
Which is just ridiculous. Insane. I mean, the only thing I can think about is just Merchant's going to be coming in. He's taller. He's going to have – I think he has a decent size reach advantage. I could be completely wrong. I mean, I'm sure he sees factors, and I think some people think that Knight tires out because he has those big muscles. But I thought Knight did pretty good the last time we sort of saw him, at least in controlling the energy and not completely gassing out early. Maybe he's in the mindset that he just has to be fitter on the day and use that distance. You know, maybe he sees something, and maybe he sees doubt. You know, who knows? But yeah, I thought it was interesting, but I didn't feel any sort of like disrespect or slight out of it.
No, but it was like it was just me reading between the lines a little bit. It's like, well, no, I didn't want to waste the matchup. Right. We'd already put in the work. So
we already put in the work.
Let's
you
stick
know.
Around and have that.
Why not?
That's what I took out of that.
He'll regret it if he takes one of those big overhand rights. He's going to be like, why did I decide to do this?
Should have fought in November.
Why did I do this?
Believe it or not, Marcin only has a 1-inch reach advantage there.
Is that it?
That shocks me as well, to be honest with you.
Interesting.
Really does shock me.
Because he's, what, 6'3", something like that?
Yeah, 6'3 to 5'10", but the reach is 73 and 74.
Interesting. So William got some long-ass arms.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, Jordan Wright versus Zach Pauga. Zach, of course, moving down from heavyweight on The Ultimate Fighter. Believes light heavyweight is the proper home for him. Jordan Wright, moving up to light heavyweight, where he's happy to point out that he is undefeated in his career. Admitted he just really is a natural light heavyweight, and trying to cut down to 185 was draining on him physically, draining on him mentally as well, and believes he'll be much happier here at light heavyweight. Zach, meanwhile,
Killer takes a bunch of light heavyweight punches.
Oh, I don't know. That's a big thing there. And then, meanwhile, Zach said, look, you know, he didn't view the Ultimate Fighter as a no lose situation. He's like, yeah, I still got knocked out. You know, he's like, it sucks. So I'm, you know, I'm happy I'm still here, but I am still very disappointed. But you know, not the most high profile of co-main events that we're having here, yeah, but one that I think does have some intrigue because you got one guy moving down, one guy moving up. It's going to be real interesting to see the way each of them looks at weigh-ins, yeah, and then see how their energy level is and that sort of thing when it plays out.
Yeah, I remember it was really high on Zach for that tough fight, or
yeah,
you know, but he was just going in against, well, that was what, against Usman, right?
Right.
You know, and that was just one of those things that, I mean, I think it was just the universe wanted Usman to win.
Like, yeah, right.
Everything was going the Usman family way at that point, you know, so it just made sense that happened. But I remember a lot of people really high, and if I can remember right, I thought the first round was pretty darn good.
Was. So, and Zach was competitive.
Yeah, yep, that's what I thought. So it'd be interesting to see, you know. I think he's a pretty heavy staff pick favorite. I remember a lot of people were picking Zach. I do like Jordan. I mean, he always shows up for fights, but I think that's one of the things that could be his downfall too. You kind of know what you're going to get from him. He never shies away from, you know, kind of ready to just meet in the middle and kind of throw down. And if you run into a guy with a lot of power, that could be a problem. But, you know, if Zach can't keep his head off the center line, you know, and Jordan saw what happened against that Usman fight, you know, he sees the game plan right there, you know, and he's quick. Jordan's got good speed, man.
Yeah, we'll see if that.
And he's got good power too. Yep. So, and if he really feels that this is his proper weight and he's feeling good going in there, I mean, I wouldn't write him off. I wouldn't write off.
Definitely wouldn't. All right, it all leads to the main event, of course, of Jessica Andrade versus Erin Blanchfield. I'm intrigued by this one, right? Because Erin Blanchfield, you got the 10-1 cold-blooded, you know, 23-year-old prospect that
just
is all
the
rage.
Talks so much at the media day. Yeah, it's just like, Erin, calm down. We can't get it all
right. Yeah, she's got to develop that personality to market herself a little bit as she gets right now. It's very just matter-of-fact,
yeah,
right to the point. I mean, it's not like she doesn't say anything. It's not like she's rude. It's just very brief, direct, matter-of-fact.
She's just there so she doesn't get fined.
That's it. So we'll see if that. But here's a big test in for the former champion and Jessica Andrade, who steps in on a week's notice. It's interesting because, you know, technically Tyler Santos, of course, is a very difficult fight, very tough opponent. Yeah. Gave Valentina Shevchenko everything she can handle. And technically, Tyler Santos is still ranked number one. So Jessica Andrade comes in here at number three. It's technically a step down in the rankings. But to me, this feels like a much bigger opportunity. Now, I asked Erin about that today, and she kind of downplayed that and was like, well, I hear people say that, but I don't really see it that way. But, you know, and maybe that's just her from, you know, inside the bubble or whatever, like actual competitor. Because I'm just telling you, for me, from the outside, I just think the general public perception, if Erin Blanchfield wins this fight, will be much, much higher than if she had beat Tyler Santos. Because even though Tyler looked amazing against Shevchenko, I just don't think that the public has like this huge reception for Tyler Santos. I think Jessica Andrade, 10 years on the roster, former champion.
Former champ.
This seems like a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I think it's that former champ thing. I mean, we all saw when, you know, she practically murdered Rose out there with that big slam. And I think, you know, I'll always have that image in my head. But you're right. I mean, but Tyler, I mean, what she was able to go out there and do, and some people, I want to say, you know, were heavily saying that, hey, maybe the fight shouldn't have been ruled the way that it was, you know. So she really,
it was close.
You know, so to think that she had the potential of fighting, you know, someone that very well could have been a champ, or at least on that champ level, because she put Shevchenko really to that point, it has to just be that former champ, you know, title that's really giving a lot of credence to Andrade, you know, and her name. She's been in the headlines for so long.
Yeah.
And I think that's why she might, you know, or people on the outside maybe think that this fight's even a little bit more important. But still, I mean, regardless of whether it was Tyler or whether it is Andrade, it just shows that Erin's at the top of where she needs to be. She's fighting the people that are at the top of the division. So, I mean, good for her. I think she's a pretty decent favor. Well, now I think about it, I know I picked her. Did I pick her? I think I did pick her. But I know a decent other amount of people on the staff did pick her, but I did see some Andrades as well.
So if you look at the lines right now, I was actually, as you were talking, I was trying to find, because I don't know if I remembered seeing a line for Tyler Santos and Aaron Blanchfield.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing the line.
But as I'm seeing it right now, Aaron Blanchfield, a slight underdog at plus 115. Jessica Andrade, a slight favorite at minus 135.
Which is, yeah.
Which is, I think, about right. And yeah. It looks like, yeah, people bet that down. So Blanchfield opened at plus 165 and bet down to plus 114.
I wouldn't be surprised if it gets even closer.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Fight night.
Okay, so here's it's an interesting one. And I wonder kind of – you said you ended up leaning – you weren't sure which way you leaned, right?
Yeah, I'm going to look at it.
Because here's when I – you know, obviously the experience – first of all, it's crazy to me that Andrade is 31. She's been in the UFC for 10 years and she's 31. But looking at it on paper – strikes landed per minute is 6.8 for Jessica Andrade, 5.7. You went Blanchfield?
Yeah.
5.79 for Blanchfield. Striking defense is 61.5% for Blanchfield. Andrade absorbs a lot more strikes per minute, 5.26 to 2.45. Takedown accuracy, much higher for Blanchfield as well. So statistically, it seems like Aaron Blanchfield is the proper pick here. She does have a 4-inch reach advantage as well, but I'm just having a hard time getting over that hump of, you know, of what Jessica does bring
she's
to the
table. She's just so strong. She's just so strong and powerful. I mean, yep. Even if Aaron can get her down to the ground, I mean, she's going to have a hard time holding her down there. But I think when you had to just put on paper, like, who's maybe the more well-rounded right now and fighting at a better level, it's going to be Blanchfield.
Yeah.
She's just got more weapons. But, man, you can't ever count out Andrade. I mean, she's just so darn strong, man.
Yep.
But, man, I'm looking at my picks, man. I might have a bad night. I'm going to give you my picks, my main. I picked Blanchfield, Zach, Parisian, Procneo, and Hernandez. Alex could lose. Marcin could lose. Parisian, I can see where a lot of people
you could go 5-0 or 0-5.
Or 0-5.
Where are you standing, by
the way? I hate this fight card.
I know we're incredibly early on.
I'm like halfway. I'm like, George is right now on top.
Oh, well, that's not going to stay.
He says he's like, oh, now I've been really paying attention. I was like, bro, don't give me that shit. But he's riding high, so I'm happy for him. He's on the top.
It's funny because for somebody, I think with George over the years, because, man, you know, you think about George.
George is 16-5. Readers are 13-8. I'm 12-9.
Okay,
one,
so you're not
two,
that far
three,
back.
4, 5, 6. I'm number 6.
It's funny because George, like, obviously he likes to lay a wager or two,
yes.
But I think that's why in our staff picks,
but
staff
he should
picks
be a
anymore.
Champion. If you gamble as much as this dude wagers, like.
But I think it's because over the years, like, he likes playing dogs, right? Because when you're betting money, you're looking for plus money if you can find it, right?
Yeah.
When you're just picking picks, like, you're honestly better off just going with the favorites most of the time. You know what I mean? Unless you just have a really good feel. So I think
you got to put in so much money to even get anything back. And then all it takes is one of those favorites to just screw
you. And that's what I'm saying. But when you're doing just staff picks, like, it's almost easy to go favorites. So I think that's why, because he leans dogs over the year. Because you're right. I don't think he's ever even been, like, close to winning.
No. But he's doing great this year. I mean, anytime, because readers are always pretty solid in how they're able to do it. And so right now the readers are 13-8, so I'm close to the readers. But, yeah, I think I usually start pretty bad. So the fact that I'm still sort of in the middle is good for this year.
Well,
so
just
far.
Another 10.5 months for George to hang on. And
I know it's when it gets towards the end is the most stressful. But, man, I want to be the first back-to-back, so I would need to get it this year. But if I get
already
the back-to-back.
Already the first two-time.
And if I could get the third time.
That's a dynasty at that point.
That would be a dynasty.
That's a dynasty.
I mean, I will say, some already said that we entered the cold coffee dynasty. But I was like, no, fellas, don't put that out there. Don't put that on me. But if I find myself at the end of this year at the top or close to it, then I will start talking shit.
That would be pretty amazing. That would be pretty amazing.
But, this card is definitely one of those ones. I mean – but that's what's kind of fun. I guess that's the fun of a night like this. You know, when you can literally look at the main card, whether they're, you know, maybe they're not guys that are going to be headlining a pay-per-view or something, but when you can easily say that, man, these fights could go either way, that should be a fun night of fight.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. I could go 5-0 or I could literally be skunked for the whole night. And now I'm looking at my picks and I'm like, oh, my God. I think I'm going to have to look again on weigh-in day to see how people look and just take the final gut reaction because after hearing people talk about it and then after seeing the guys today, I'm like, because you know me, I don't do much research.
He's like, well, saw them on Contender Series, pick. Yeah. He's like, well, that pick.
Well, you know me well, because I do. I put a lot of value in Contender Series, and I certainly put a lot of value in how good-looking they are because that's all very, very technical when it comes to their skills. If they look good, they got to feel good, and if you feel good, you got to fight good, right? Isn't that like what Muhammad Ali said?
That's right.
Yeah, but this is one of those ones. So, yeah, I mean, as well as, you know, if anything, looking at a card like this, this is one of those cards that we always say, you know, it could be an incredible night. You know, it's the cards that people always overlook, that people look back and say, wow, why didn't I watch this one? I mean, so very much looking at the stories and look at the people in here, and I'm not just trying to sell you on the card or whatever.
I think this could be
a good fight night.
I agree.
If you at least the main card. I mean, of course, I have my pick and Lena Landsberg, who I'll love forever. you know, she might go out there and get absolutely starched, and she probably will, but still love her.
That is the only ranked opponents outside of the main event, by the way, Lena Landsberg, Myra Buena Silva. So if you're looking for ranked action, so I thought that's kind of weird that you have two ranked opponents and it's on the prelims, but I don't know if that's maybe because they want the European to fight earlier in the night.
How are you going to take off that main card for that fight?
Well, I agree.
I mean,
I could see
even taking the heavyweights off of it, but I'm like, people like to see the heavyweights, and you want to see the heavyweights in the prime action. But I mean, look at that. OSP is like
OSP
third down.
And Philippe Lenz, OSP on the prelims. That's pretty wild because you're talking about, you know, a veteran of the game. I mean, 25 UFC fights for Ovince St. Preux, and you know, he's third fight from the bottom. So
that's saying something right there. That's saying a lot right there.
Yeah, Philippe Lenz, the favorite in that one. A couple of things I will say. Khusein Ashgabov comes to the UFC with a 23-0 record. It's funny because I was walking around the PI actually the other day. My friend Gokhanya Sidley was in town from Belgium, and he was having a meeting up there. And so I went and picked him up so we could go have some dinner and walked around the PI with him. And Khusein was in the cage working out. And as I was just walking by, and he's like, hey, I like walked over. I was like, what's up, man? He was like, 23-0. He was like, 24-0 on Saturday. I'll show you. I was like, oh, dude. I was like,
that's awesome.
I was like, yeah, man.
Did you know who it was before?
I didn't. Until he said 23-0, I wasn't, because I'd never seen him in person before. Like, I knew that. As soon as he said 23-0, I was like, okay, cool. That's Khusein. And I did. I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm kind of excited for your debut. Like, because he hasn't fought in a couple years. I'm like, where have you been? He's like, I had visa issues and stuff. So he actually speaks decent English. But I thought it was so funny because I was just walking around. You know, we were taking a little tour or whatever because Gokhan hadn't seen the PI before. And he just shouted me out. And he's like, hey, 23-0. I'll be 24-0 on Saturday. So I was like, all right, I like it. But that's an impressive record. Now,
that's ridiculous.
I don't care who you're beating. So I'm interested by that one. And then, of course, coach is on there. Juan Camilo Ronderos.
Yeah.
You know, he's facing a stud there.
I know,
Clayton Carpenter. But
I mean, I picked him. Of course, I homered for him. But, he's a great person. He's a great coach. But, man, I've been seeing a lot of the behind-the-scenes footage or stuff that Eric Nixick's been putting out in those guys. I mean, he's doing all the work. But, man, he has a huge test in front of him.
Yep.
And, again, you know, I mean, this is a kid that came off Contender Series and did some other stuff. I mean, like, it's going to be a tough fight. But, and he's starting the night off, you know. I'm hoping that's a good thing. You know, I'm hoping he's just going to have that great, fun, nervous energy and wants to start the night off, you know, good. So, I'm hoping good things, but man, I'm gonna be a wreck through that first fight.
I know. I'll plug the MMA Underground YouTube page. I did an interview with Juan Camilo. That's up there. Go check it out. He is fired up and ready to go. It's wild, man. You know, talk about like people, you know, and their passion for the sport and that sort of thing. He's like, man, I walked away from like an $80,000 a year job to do this. He's like, now, he's like, I'm about a month away from being evicted. He's like, I got to fight. He's like, but I love this shit. I'm doing exactly
awesome.
What I want. He's like, I could quit right now and go get a high paying office job and pay the bills. He's like, I'm a businessman. I know how to do things. He's like, I don't want that. He's like, I want this.
Yeah.
This is my dream. I'm chasing my passion. When people say that, it's like, yeah, I mean, you got to respect that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's the same story for everybody on the card, right? They're all chasing their dream. But when somebody verbalizes it that way, man, it was like, I don't know, man, like motivational speaker type stuff.
That's it.
Man.
You know, and I think we often forget. I mean, maybe when we hear these stories, a lot of times we kind of forget that moment. You know, we just think, oh, these athletes have just been naturally talented. You know, it's meant to be that they're going to go in this. But a lot of times we forget that some sacrifice what would be a great normal life and other things to follow what some would say. You know, you're going to do that hobby? You think you're going to make it? You know, what's the likelihood? Like, these people have done it. They've went and they've given it all, you know, and they're willing to give it all. And here's another person that's pursuing that. There's something just – you got to have a lot of respect for just somebody so willing and so determined to put everything on the line for their dreams. You know, yep. They're putting their livelihood on it, and they're putting their actual life on the line as well, you know. I mean, so – man, and well, I'm going to be a mess in that one, but I want to see good things. I mean, I know regardless of the outcome, I mean, he's going to have a future doing something in MMA, and I know he has little side hustles and stuff. I'm hoping, you know, and this is nothing against Clayton. I mean, Clayton's a hell of a kid.
Yeah.
He's coming in 6-0, but man.
You spent a lot of time with Juan Camilo.
Yeah.
He actually said that was the first time he had ever coached, was coaching in the Train Alta program, and he was like, and I loved it. He was like, I really opened up my eyes to things I want to do. He's like, I really liked it.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
When you figure the knowledge these guys have, and that's what was interesting when we were talking to the guy that won't be named that came in the room that wasn't supposed to. We know these guys are high-level athletes, and they're able to push themselves, but, you know, how does that transition over when you try to take that step from being a fighter to actually being a coach? Mm-hmm. You have, you know, I think most of these fighters have that inner voice that tells them to do these certain things and drives them. And when that voice speaks to them, they can listen to it, and the message registers. But when you take those words and you try to say that to another person, what happens when that doesn't immediately register? How do you then convince this person to do the things that you see in your mind?
Yep.
And some fighters have a great knack for it. You know, James Krause, as much as, you know, people want to say whatever was going right now, guy was a decent fighter.
Yep.
He was a good fighter, but he's a better coach than he was a fighter.
Yep.
You know, we've seen that happen with other ones. Saif was a good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a better coach.
Yep.
You know, so it's interesting. So I love the passion to these other things. And, you know, it's the logical thing to happen for these fighters. You know, if you're going to be a fighter and you're going to take yourself to that level, if you can be a coach, you certainly are going to keep yourself in the field a lot longer than those that just suck at talking to people. And if you can't fight, you maybe had a couple fights, then you're going to have to go get another job, you know. So I hope the transition, you know, I just hope that he can have a successful career and have a successful career in coaching, because he was great, man. He was like a cheerleader and a good coach, and was able to kind of do it. And he motivated a group of bunch of fucking fat, lazy people to do great things, you know. So if you could do that, you know, I think he's going to be okay on the coaching side of
things.
That's
funny. Well, we're looking forward to that. All right. We'll have full coverage of UFC Fight Night 219. Of course, we'll have the and a half episode over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. So if you want to help support the show for as little as $3 a month, you could do it right there and get exclusive access to those and a half episodes. If not, just rate us, review us, leave us some feedback if you can. We certainly would appreciate it. I know people don't like Power Slap very much, but I am interested to find out that their pay-per-view is on March 11th, which is the same date as there's a UFC fight as well.
You also paid attention to the NSAC hearing today.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really talk much about it, but Power Slap was part of the discussion today.
It was actually pretty interesting to hear it, because they're talking about changing the regulations and changing the rules
and introducing
instant replay, and they want like every slap to be reviewed because they want to make sure that
drag out a fight night.
It will. But they want to make sure that, you know, obviously that they can do it quickly, but they just want to make sure that it's not being done illegally. He was really concerned with like the bone landing instead
of being a palm strike,
exactly, instead of the meaty part of the hand. But it was to hear Anthony Marnell. He actually said, you know, and this is kind of a paraphrase, but he's like, I don't care if you guys like this stuff or not, I need you to take it serious as you would a $20 million boxing match, $100 million boxing match. You know, which I respect that, to say, look, man, maybe you don't dig this stuff, but we are regulating it, and we need to make sure that we are regulating it to the highest standard, to the highest level. So I just thought that was an interesting quote to hear, that like, hey, man, maybe you guys don't like this, but we have chosen to regulate it, so let's make sure we're regulating it the right way. So I thought that was pretty cool to hear. But
yeah, if you're going to do it the right way. Don't just make money off
that's
of it.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. But I'm interested to see what the plans are for March 11th, because you can't imagine – I know it's two different audiences and two different whatever, but you can't imagine they'd want to counter-program themselves. It's just a fight night card, but still interesting. So that's the one I believe that's Merab Dvalishvili and Peter Yan, that is at the Virgin Hotels.
That's why it was at the Virgin Hotels. Why the heck is it at this location?
But you know what's interesting? That's actually where the PFL is going to be too, when they come to town in April for their shows, is at the Virgin Hotels as well. So the Virgin is booking out some stuff, which used to be the joint, the Hard Rock, the new joint. So there's been stuff there.
Oh,
for,
okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going to look it up. I was like, I don't even know.
The theater
version
is the old joint at Hard Rock. Like, yeah. It used to be the Hard Rock. So.
Gotcha.
So we've done shows there before.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway. A lot of MMA.
Now that explains it. Well, I learned something. I was like, why the hell is this random ass place?
It's funny
up?
Because I thought the same thing too, and I assume maybe it's just because Virgin, like, obviously they've changed over from the Hard Rock, and I'm like, maybe they're just actively pursuing getting stuff. I don't think it was. I think it's just because they need the Apex.
They need the Apex.
Power slap. That'll make some people happy. All right, listen. I got to. We'll see how they lay it out. All right, I'm going to go run to my kids' soccer practice. So appreciate everybody for supporting us as always. And, yeah, glad to be back with my man Cole Coffee. We'll do it again next week. I'll have the and a half later this weekend. In the meantime, everybody have a great time. Thanks for listening.